Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Janice LaChance, Director, Office of Personnel Management. Well, in this segment, I'd like to talk to you about the employees at OPM. You oversee some 3,700 people with an annual budget of $27 billion. How do you manage an organization of this size?
Mostly, I try to get out of the way and let the employees do their jobs. I mentioned earlier that we had a tremendous number of very, very dedicated individuals who just do a terrific job at OPM. And I think the best thing I can do for them is just let them do their job. But I think what is important is that every employee at OPM understand our mission and understand how they relate to the agency's mission. I'm also a big believer in delegating. I have a great leadership team at OPM. I don't have to be right there with them every time. I trust them, and I think it's important for leaders to trust their leadership team. But I also trust my frontline employees. I know that the people who are answering the phone on our retirement customer service lines are extremely devoted to those annuitants who count on them to give them the right information they need to plan their retirement and some sense of financial security and dignity. So I think the best thing to do is delegate, let people do their jobs, and listen. Let them tell you what they need to do their jobs, and then go out there and fight to get them the resources to do it.
And I noticed that leaders of large federal government organizations often have a large external focus. I read about you making speeches. You're in the paper often explaining positions. How much of your time is spent looking externally versus looking internally and dealing with those issues?
I would think it's about half and half. I do spend a lot of time externally because I think OPM is an agency that is somewhat misunderstood. I think we're still carrying some baggage from 8-10 years ago when we weren't quite as responsive an agency as we are now. I also think that there's a little bit of a mystery. You know, what is it and what do they do exactly? And I think once people understand what we do and how we're doing it, it is a tremendous benefit to both the administration and the government as a whole to know that there's such a professional organization working on some of these tough issues. So I think it's very, very important to carry the OPM message out to as many people as I can. And I don't mind being on the road and living out of a suitcase. And so if people are willing to listen to me, I try my best to get out there to talk with them. But I also think that you can't ignore what's going on internally. I have a lot of obligations to the people who work at OPM and who've dedicated their career to the issues that we care about. So I want to make sure that I'm not neglecting any of that. So I'm always in touch with my staff. I'm always having meetings with our local union affiliate from AFGE and the local union in Boyers, Pennsylvania, where we have a very large facility, making sure that they have the resources they need to get the jobs done, and working with the leaders internally to make sure that we've got a good operation and that we're not only doing the right thing, but we're doing it right in the right way, and that we're as efficient and effective as we can be.
In our last segment, you mentioned the wave of retirements that will be coming shortly and how the government's trying to prepare for that. But what I'm wondering about is how will this affect the SES, and are there different steps being taken to prepare for the wave of retirements in the SES?
Yes, we've been concerned about the aging of the SES for a while, and I just had a birthday on Saturday, so I'm actually adding to that problem instead of helping to solve it. But the SES needs very special attention. I think overall the government has really been lax in overall workforce planning, and we haven't done a very good job of thinking ahead. I think your natural inclination is always to look at the next vacancy and how we're going to deal with that. What I think we need now is a more comprehensive approach to workforce planning, but with special attention to the SES because they are such a valuable resource, and particularly in this political year where the role of the SES becomes ever more important to making sure that the policies and the programs of government continue uninterrupted. So we're working very, very hard with all of the agency heads to make sure that they understand that they really have to start thinking about the kinds of skills that they're going to need not just next week or next month, but a year from now, 5 years from now, and even 10 years from now, and start today in developing the leaders that they'll need or knowing where to look for the leaders. They don't all have to be on board now, but you have to start thinking about where you're going to go out and recruit them and have them ready when those openings come up and when the agency has those needs.
Well, that's a good transition to my next question, because I know you've seen the endowment's report called Leaders Growing Leaders, Preparing the Next Generation of Public Service Executives by Ray Blunt. And he talks about the same things you just talked about. Current government leaders need to do more to prepare for the next generation. So I'm just curious, do you agree with his report, and did you have any other reactions?
Absolutely. Ray Blunt is somebody who OPM uses as an advisor and an expert when we try to update some of the competencies that are needed to be a leader in the 21st century government. I think that it's critically important to start thinking ahead. We have an obligation to identify potential leaders very, very early in their career. We're at a point now where we're hiring people who don't necessarily think that they're going to stay in government for their entire work life. So if we see somebody with a lot of potential, we better identify them, train them, nurture them, and make sure that we can convince them that this is the kind of place they want to work and get them ready for those SES positions. So there's a critical responsibility that Ray pointed out there that I'm not sure people have taken seriously until they've started seeing some of these very dramatic numbers of retirements that could happen over the last several years. And I think his work is going to be a big help to us as we're trying to convince people to do this the right way.
And I'd be interested in your reaction to another endowment grant report called Reflections on Mobility, Case Studies of Six Federal Executives by Mike Serlin. Do you agree there should be an increase in mobility among SES members?
Yes, and for people who've followed my tenure as director, they will know that I have proposed some very dramatic but not very popular ideas about how to promote mobility in the federal government. I'm probably the best example of how mobility can help you. I've never been able to hold a job for very long. And even if I was in the same place, I always tried to do different things. And I don't think there is anybody in the federal government or in the private sector who can really reach the pinnacle of their career without having had a broad variety of experiences as they moved up in the ranks. We have a real issue with mobility in the federal government. I think there are too many people who set their sights on a particular job and then just don't want to let go. But the fact is they'd be so much better and so much more effective if they had maybe had a different kind of experience under a different kind of leader with different types of coworkers. Maybe they'd understand the budget process better if they just spent a little time in a CFO's office, or they'd be more proficient on their computer if they understood the importance of technology from the perspective of a chief information officer. I think mobility is critical if we're going to continue to have the best SES that we can have.
Well, you make a compelling case, and your career and your successes are further evidence. And even in Serlin's report, he profiles six people who did change jobs and did move up. And so I'm curious, why has there been such resistance?
Oh, I think it just comes down to the fact that people have wanted a particular job for so long, and once they've got it, they want to make sure that they're not letting go. I think, too, unfortunately, that we have a tendency in the federal government to move people around only when they're not meeting expectations. And I think that's a tragedy. We have to turn that on its head and make sure that mobility is a reward and it's a signal that you're going to be a star. And so you need the broadest kind of experience possible rather than something that may be perceived as being punitive. So we have a lot of work to do as government leaders in individual agencies in changing the culture and making mobility something more desirable rather than something to avoid at all costs. And I'm looking forward to Mr. Serlin's next report, where he can talk about 600 leaders who were mobile and who were successful. But we're trying very hard at OPM to foster this kind of atmosphere of mobility. And we're trying to also establish a clearinghouse so that there we can connect some hot executives with some hot job opportunities. So we're working hard with stakeholders on that, and hopefully we'll be able to make a dent in the resistance that we've met so far.
Well, let me start this question quickly before we go to break and then follow up afterwards. You were quoted in the paper of talking about the federal government's engaged in a war for talent. I wonder, before we go to break, what does that expression mean?
What it means to me is that the federal government, unfortunately, is no longer the employer of choice. We have to make it that again. We have an obligation to the American people to do that. And so we have to go all out. We have to have a wartime effort of the same levels that we had during World War II to compete with the private and nonprofit sectors for the very, very best and brightest employees.
Okay, well, hold that thought. We'll go to a break, and I'll be right back with more of the Business of Government Hour.